Around the country, particularly difficult missing person cases often go cold. While news media lose interest and local police departments focus their resources on other active criminal cases, a growing group of people are taking to the web to try to solve these overlooked mysteries.
This team of amateur web sleuths attempts to match missing persons with unidentified remains. And according to our next guest, the drive to solve these cases gets so strong it becomes a competitive sport, complete with jealousy and sore losers. Deborah Halber joins us now. She is a journalist and author of the new book, The Skeleton Crew, How Amateur Sleuths Are Solving America's Coldest Cases. Deborah, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, Gene. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you bet. I want to start out talking about the two groups of people, I guess the two main groups of people that you focus on in your book. And the one main group of people are the number of dead who have disappeared, who have died by under mysterious circumstances, and nobody knows who they are. There are more of them than you think.
Yeah, there really are. It's bizarrely common to actually come across a body with no ID. And, you know, if anybody's ever watched any of the cold case TV shows, you know that as long as there's no information, the case goes cold really, really quickly.
And then the second group of people that you focus on in the book are, I guess, amateur web detectives who have taken off over some of these cases on their own time, on their own dime, on their own computers, you know, sort of off the police radar, and have attempted to solve them. And it appears also that there are more of those people than you think.
Yeah, in the early days of the internet, this actually started becoming a bit of a trend. There were people who would go around and look for traditional sources of information, newspaper archives, microfiche, death notices, and they'd start putting that information online. And the big advantage to that was the information they had up there was crossing state lines. So suddenly, people around the country realized that they could look at missing person reports, they could look at these databases, and start trying to put two and two together.
Now, you focus on a lot of stories and a lot of people in your book, but one of them who sort of runs the whole arc of the book is a guy named Todd Matthews from Tennessee, and he is one of these web detectives, and he is involved in any number of cases. Talk a little bit about him and how he sort of fits the profile of somebody who's interested in taking on this work and what he derives from it.
Well, he does fit the profile because he basically got obsessed with a single case, and that often happens. All the stories that I tell in the book all start the same way, with a body being found. And then the mystery is, who is this person? And the case he happened to get obsessed with is a young woman who turned up dead in Kentucky in 1968, and she just became known as Tent Girl because they couldn't identify her. And Todd spent a decade of his life. He was only 17 and in high school when he heard about the case, and he just stuck with it off and on until the internet actually came along, and that's what helped him reunite her with her name.
And ultimately, he was successful. Ultimately, he's done other work of this kind, too. But what is it about these web detectives? And you used the word he's obsessed with this case before. What is it that drives them to investigate these cold, cold cases of people that they've never met, you know, of a death that has sort of passed into legend?
Yeah, that's something I really wrestled with in the book. I really wanted to understand that. And I think the answer is that what happens is that people stumble upon a case, and it is initially curiosity. It's a challenge. You know, who doesn't love a mystery? But I think as time goes on, I think they become kind of personally invested in an individual case. And each city has their own almost little celebrity cases. You may not everybody may know about them, but they are out there. And as time goes on, they start wondering, you know, about the person individually, about their family. They think they have to have family out there. They have to have friends out there. And I think it turns into a compassionate cause. But there are a lot of people trying to do the same cases at the same time, and that's when it gets competitive.
Yeah, competitive. Like, and so within this world of web detectives, you call one group kind of the mavericks, and the other one's the trust builders. And that is an example of a rift, but I imagine it devolves even more than that.
Yeah, that is definitely one of the ways in which some people feel like they want to be working behind the scenes, they want to be helping law enforcement, they don't want any personal recognition. And others are more like they want to be the ones who are calling law enforcement directly, they want to be saying to them, hey, I've got this match, I want you to look into this. And it's a pretty big philosophical shift and a split, and it does cause a lot of adversity, and a lot of these people are using screen names on these sites, so they're saying things that they might not say if they were actually seeing the person face to face.
Yeah, I was interested to read in your book about that there are networks, you know, that they that the web detectives sort of operate within a framework of sorts, and that they are connected in a sense, and they are often kind of do know what others are doing and what cases are out there and what's being found and so forth.
Exactly. There are a few major organizations. Some of them, there's the Doe Network, as in Jane and John Doe. There's WebSleuths.com. There's the Charlie Project. There's Can You Identify Me? There are groups that have really developed over the years, and they each have their particular followers.
And so what do the police think of all this, you know? I mean, on the one hand, they're taking cracks at cases that have long since been, you know, gone cold. On the other hand, they have a lot of things on their plate right now, and having somebody email them or call them up with a clue about this 30-year-old case has to be kind of a pain sometimes.
Exactly. Some of the police have dubbed these groups or individuals within the groups the Doe Nuts, as in Jane and John Doe, and they think of them as a colossal waste of time, and they really don't like getting calls from them. But on the other hand, I actually have talked to detectives who have become very dependent on some of these groups, and there's at least a few detectives who feel like they could not have solved some cases without this help.
So when you started writing the book, did you have sort of a thesis in mind as to the kind of people you were going to meet and the kind of work they'd be involved in and whether they were doing good work? And did that perspective change over the course of your writing?
Well, to some extent, I assumed it had to be an altruistic kind of endeavor, and to a large extent it is. But I had no idea the kind of people I would meet. They're all over the country. They're all ages, all walks of life. A lot of them have, they're kind of underemployed. They're very, very smart, but their day jobs are not very intellectually challenging. Some of them work in big box, hardware stores, supermarkets. And then this hobby is really a challenge, and they take it on a lot of hours, almost every night. Weekends, they're on the web doing this searching.
Now, as you look ahead, do you, and you've had a chance to take a pretty good look at this, what do you think there's a lasting impact that these, you know, amateurs are going to have on the way that law enforcement handles missing person cases in the future?
I do. I think what has to happen, which hopefully will happen, is that the police, law enforcement, will see the people out there as a resource, and they will one day be working side to side, maybe just having them in the police station inputting data or going out to get a DNA sample from a family. But these people are willing to do this, and they have the time and the interest, and law enforcement, frankly, doesn't always have the resources.
All right. Well, Deborah Halber, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We've been talking with Deborah Halber. She is the author of The Skeleton Crew, How Amateur Sleuths Are Solving America's Coldest Cases.